Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. My co-host for the program is Stone Payton. He is a vital cog at Business Radio X with his own show, High Velocity Radio. Good morning, Stone.
Well, good morning, sir. We had a good time this weekend, didn't we, out at your thing?
The book, we had fun. Festival? We collectively were busy.
We did more interviews, I think, on Saturday than we do like in 2 or 3 months around here, don't you think?
As near as I can tell, I did 22 and Vanessa did 14. So we did 36 interviews. That's like 18 weeks of shows.
I think that's got to be a Business Radio X record. I'm going to get you a trophy.
Oh, I will wait for it. But you were busy, too. You were there for the remote. Then you did baseball. Then you right. did racetrack. And then you did. You even did a church meeting somewhere in there.
Hey, I'm a busy guy.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. Well, here we are. We're inside, thank God, today. We're in a studio. Rain isn't going to affect us. And this morning, we're going to reprise a theme from our June 21st show. And it's a theme I think we'll probably revisit occasionally on Right Here, Right Now. We call it, which came first, the career or the book? And I don't know the answer for today's guest, so we're going to find out together, Stone. And we're going to shift our process a bit for this show as well. I'm going to introduce both of our guests and invite them to join in a dialogue or conversation. John Mulkey is the author of 3 books, with his most recent being Shrewd Home Buying, soon to be available on Amazon as a Kindle book, right? Do I have that right?
That's right.
Okay, good. John also has an active website and blog as the Housing Guru, and he receives emails, phone calls, and inquiries from all over the United States from folks seeking insight on home buying. And previous books written by John focus on metaphysics and spiritual issues and healing work. Greg Vetter is president of Vetter Productivity, an organizational training and consulting firm in Atlanta. Greg wrote, Find It in 5 Seconds, Gaining Control in the Information Age. Greg's business grows steadily, and his book on organization and productivity helps to grow the business. Well, welcome to John and Greg. You know, as I prepared for our conversation, I realized that I've known each of you for 10 years. You know, when we met, I was working as a naturopathic counselor at an alternative healing arts center. Who would have thought that 10 years from then we would be here today, my getting to interview you? Now, one of the things, you might not have seen it in the fine print of the email I sent to you, but no stories from 10 years ago, okay? So, which came first, the book or the job? That's a toss-up question. Either one of you.
Well, for me, this is John.
Mm-hmm.
For me, they came together. They sort of evolved. I started in the construction business almost 40 years ago, working as a builder, home builder. And I had also had an interest in writing since my college days. I'd been writing magazine articles and so forth. So they sort of evolved together. When I was in the corporate world of construction, working for a major construction company, did some writing for them, writing their builder manual and doing some other technical writing in the business. But I'd always wanted to write other things and always had other interests too. So I wear a number of different hats, both as a builder, but I also have an interest in the world of the metaphysical. I've been down into the Amazon a couple of times and worked with the shamans down there. I've worked with shamans from around the world. And I wanted to share some of that, too. So over the years, I've written several things about metaphysical topics, written magazine articles again, and started work on a book back in the late 90s. And I did a book called Metamorphosis, which was a novel based upon my experience as sort of a semi-autobiographical novel, and had it published, and then also focused on my home building career, which has supported my metaphysical habits throughout the years. Used the the money that I earned as a home builder to help promote some of the other things that I did and some of my other interests allowed me to travel and do things. So writing and work sort of evolved together for me.
And they feed each other, don't they, and continue to do that. Well, Greg, for you, which was first? Did you start your consulting business and then write Find It in 5 Seconds, or was it simultaneous? What was it?
I started the business in 1989, training and consulting business and organization. Back then, there were few people doing what I was doing in the United States, so I was somewhat of a groundbreaker. The book did not occur until it took about 3 years to write in 1999. So that came about 10 years later.
Wow.
And I needed to decide whether I wanted to write the book to get business or to sell it to a readership.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided to set it up in such a way that it would be read by people for business.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I basically rewrote the entire book. So I took it to a client over at Mississippi Power, who was in charge of public relations, Rex Kelly. And Rex said, do you want to sell books or do you want to sell business? And I said, I want to sell business. And he said, rewrite your book.
Oh, my goodness.
So I literally rewrote the entire book. And that was kind of interesting to do.
I like what you're saying there because it plays into my hand, if you will, as the owner of Right Choice Services and a writing coach. So often clients will come to me and say, I'm done. Just edit it and go on. And I say, well, maybe we need to rewrite. And that's a critical piece often, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What kind of changes did you make after the business executive spoke to you?
Well, it was originally called Shredding the Myths of the Office, and I had 12 commonly held organizational and productivity myths, and I changed it to Find It in 5 Seconds. So there was a shift in how I wrote it,
mm-hmm.
in terms of somebody reading through as a story or stories,
mm-hmm.
versus how a business person would read it.
Okay.
That was the big shift.
So you shifted, in essence, your target market.
Absolutely.
And it made a lot of difference.
Absolutely. I was not planning on, even though I had it in bookstores, that was not what my intention was. My intention was to have a book that I could send ahead of time or give to the mm-hmm. boss and have credibility with it.
Authority. That works.
Right.
Well, John, your books are vastly different with The Metamorphosis, which I've read, and The Shrewd Home Buying, which I've critiqued, went through, edited a little bit. Do you find yourself kind of schizoid when you look at the two of them?
Well, what I've discovered is that I can work on one project at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I can't spread myself around, and I actually tried to do that. I really thought I could shift from one mode to the other. Built a house for a friend of mine as I was ending my home building career several years ago. At that time, I was working on my latest book, which was published, which is the one that's available on Amazon Kindle, called Lessons from the Light, which is the true story of a Native American healer who had a near-death experience. And I thought, I will work on that book as I build this house. So I bought a laptop computer to take with me because when I was sitting on the job site, most of the time I'm doing nothing. I'm just sitting there as an advisor to the subcontractors.
Well, you're the boss, right?
Right. So I don't really do anything other than stand and walk around and look and so mm-hmm. forth and answer questions.
Sounds like a writing coach.
Yeah.
Hey, that was a little personal.
So I bought my laptop computer and sat down to start the first day on the job, opened it up, and realized two things very quickly. One, as I was sitting in my truck outside, to be away from the noise of the construction, I realized you can't see the screen on a laptop computer when you're outdoors.
Aha. That makes it a problem, huh?
So, and I couldn't take it inside because I was too distracted. So I took that laptop to work one day, and that was it. That was the end of my
trying to
write and build at the same time. I realized you can't shift your consciousness that much, you know. If you're trying to be creative and write something, you can't just stop and go answer a question and get right back, jump right back into that writing mode.
Doesn't
it
work.
Just doesn't work
does
at all.
Does not work. Well, Greg, you wrote your book, and you've told me prior to the show that you've got a second book written but not published. What was the impact then once you had Find It in 5 Seconds? Did it do for you what you hoped it would do?
Absolutely. It was a very big credibility piece, and that's what I needed. It's amazing how differently people think of you when you have a book or you're an author, especially sometimes if it's not self-published, if it's through another party.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how did you choose to go with your book? Did you use a publisher? Did you self-publish?
I had someone that I published the book for me and was able to get it into libraries and bookstores. So I paid them X amount of money to market it and to publish it.
Yeah.
And they did a pretty good job on it compared to what I thought they would do.
And that's a critical piece. A lot of people, when they write, don't understand that the author has to engage in the marketing or pay somebody to do the marketing, that the publisher is not going to do it, correct?
Absolutely, and you have to do both. It's sell, sell, sell. It's always sell, sell, sell. First priority, sell. Second priority, sell. Third priority, sell.
And maybe the fourth one is to write so that you can do the first three, correct?
Yeah. Sell.
Now, I know John blogs. Do you, Greg?
No.
But you have an e-newsletter you put out?
Every week, a tip for a better week. In fact, that's really what the book is. It's 2 years' worth of tips. And it's a contrarian view. It's very different from the view that's held by most people in business today.
Well, tell us a little bit more about that.
For instance, how many times do you think somebody checks their email a day?
I am not a good role model.
Too much, I'm sure.
Yeah.
150 times, let's say.
Whoa.
Every time somebody checks that, what they're doing is processing information. Processing information is looking at, sorting, organized, getting a look at. It's not producing. So everything during your day is either processing information or producing work. The shift has occurred from producing work to processing information. So every time you look at your email, or every time you look at your handheld, or every time you look and read, you've just interrupted yourself and you've stopped producing. And this is epidemic, and most people don't have a clue. It's just becoming part of the way that we do business. And unfortunately, we're teaching kids to do the same thing.
Even more so with the smartphones and all that, you think? Because I think I catch myself checking the email on the smartphone just because it's cool and it's something to do while the next guy's talking. Is it even more so nowadays, right?
Every time that you, for certain people, every time that they check it, it's a dopamine high.
Right.
It's a dopamine high. And it's not talked about at all. It's no different than sex, gambling, rock and roll, kidding, drugs. Any type of an addiction, you're there with anticipation, and you get that buzz when you do it. You feel important. There's all kinds of things that are going on. The biggest problem from a business point of view is you're not producing work. And that's the bottom line. If you own your own business, you know, or you're the boss, the idea is you must produce work. Every time you look, and you do this over and over and over and over and over. One of the tips was about addiction specifically, I said, turn off everything at 6 o'clock and see if you can do that. And if you can't, you better ask yourself why.
Oh, man, I have been taken to the woodshed. I have just gone. But it's also given me the opportunity to say, I don't need to buy one of those smartphones or anything like that. But that really, all I hear the ding and I go check my email. And I know part of it's escape for me, but I would be much better off not doing that.
It was Pavlov's ding, not Pavlov's dog.
That there, I think you're right. Well, John, you do blog, don't you?
Yes, I don't drool when I get an email, though. But
oh, good.
but I do check my email periodically, and because I have multiple email accounts because I'm doing so many different things. But I blog as the housing guru, and most of my blogging relates to that, although I do have a couple of other areas that I blog also.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell us a little bit more about the shrewd home buying and the housing guru.
Well, Shrewd Home Buying, I wrote that just so I could share all of the things that I've learned in 40 years of home building. During that time, I had my own small company, but also worked for the largest builder in Metro Atlanta. So I learned lots of things that I thought I could share with, the first idea was share with home buyers, because that's what I was dealing with as a builder or working for a building company. But later I realized I could expand that beyond just the buyer aspect of it. But what I wanted to do to share for home buyers was give them tips. Originally, when I started the home buying book, the subtitle was Tips Builders Sellers Don't Want You to Know, because I had learned lots of things that builders or sellers will do to entice you to buy what is sometimes the wrong house. I have in a chapter, for instance, on the lure of model homes in the book, and where I talk about some of the things that builders, especially large corporate builders, will do to deceive you in a model home. Some of the things will be buying smaller than normal furniture to make a room look bigger.
Wow.
Also knew a builder who baked cookies every day in their model home just to give the aroma of freshly baked cookies so that it would remind you, because the sense of smell is a very powerful trigger,
mm-hmm.
and it may take you back to your favorite grandma's visit or mm-hmm. your aunt or whatever who baked cookies and may entice you to buy, actually buy the wrong house sometimes. So I wanted to share those things, and then, as I said, later I expanded it where I have tips for sellers also. There are things that I offer tips on how to sell your house.
Like baked cookies, right?
Right, baked cookies. And on the website and in the blog, I talk about things that you can do. I have a whole section on home repair tips,
mm-hmm.
For instance, how to fix a leaky faucet and so forth. I give tips on remodeling, how to buy materials and so forth.
I'm thinking in the South, you should like fry bacon, and have some collard greens.
There you go. I think so.
You think about your demographic and then decide what you're going to bake or have on the stove.
That's it. That's it. Greg, I really liked what you pointed out about the email. What other kinds of things do you share? You work mostly with corporations as opposed to individuals. Are you able to do, do you work one-on-one with just people like Joe or Jane off the street?
Absolutely. It's a couple different things. Primarily, it's one-on-one
mm-hmm.
with an individual because that's when transformation occurs. People have got to be in the process of feeling a shift. And the only way that happens is when you work with somebody and you confront them, or you give them a piece of paper to make a decision on, or you have them look at their 20,000 emails mm-hmm. in their email program.
What's the transformation you're after when you work with the people?
I was working with a director the other day, and it was very interesting. We were going through, and I was explaining to her the difference between an action and a support, just a simple piece of paper. And most people look at a piece of paper with blanks on it, and they would call it a form.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we all do. And I said, okay, if you just need to fill that form out, is that form an action or a support? Well, if you need to fill it out, it's an action. Okay. What happens if you don't need to fill it out? What is it? It's kind of a save or a support. So that piece of paper properties will shift. Well, what happens if you need to give that to somebody and take it from your office to someone else's? Suddenly that becomes an outbox. What do you need to do with it if you no longer need it? Trash it. So here's a simple piece of paper, which we call a form. But in reality, the secret is it an out, action, trash, or support, which is OATS. In a computer, it would be forward, action, delete, support, FADS. What we're looking for is that awareness, the light in a client's eyes where they finally get that what they're doing isn't working. There are only two types of people that want to change, those that need it and those that want it. 80% in the middle, as I like to always say, are pretty much in denial.
Oh. Okay, that's just kind of right there, isn't it?
Well, it's about a 3% enlightenment and 17% desperation. I have to do this. I got a bad review. So the secret is you've got to be, in a sense, willing to shift.
Mm-hmm.
And the old joke in the change business is, I enjoy change as long as somebody else is doing the change.
Yes.
Very, very few people are willing to do that. It's a very scary situation.
Now, do you give your book, or is it part of your package when someone retains your services and asks them to read through it? Is that become a textbook for you, or how does that work?
That and also a workbook, both, yes. I'll okay. have them read through the book, and it's fun because it's a very non-business book.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I can't stand reading a lot of the business books because they're so boring,
mm-hmm.
and I don't want to read something boring. And so I made it more fun. Then I have a 50-page workbook, which of course is for sale also. And then they once read the stories, have fun, read through it, and then they go to the particular points.
And you may not recall, but I do have a copy of your book, and I did read it, and it was fun.
Well, thank you.
And it was also self-convicting, which was not so much fun. But your vetter. A better way is that's because I get that weekly and I glance at that, and you know, I have to confess, because I'm good at that, but sometimes I read those and I think, hey, ouch, you know, you nailed me on that one, because you have a fine ability to take what we just do as a matter of course and say, look at it in terms of productivity.
Right, we're doing so many things without thinking about it, and they're fun tips, because I usually ask a question, give a little in the body, and then have a fun ending. And mm-hmm. Instead of blogging, those are my blogs, and
sure.
you can get those, and it's about a 10 to 12 second read. And it's fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's about everything.
Do you get feedback to those?
Absolutely, all the time. They love it. And I just did one on the addiction the other day, and it's amazing to hear what people will say back, and
I'm
especially
sure.
when they come back and go, thanks. One of them was just simply called Slow Down.
Okay.
And we're so wired.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to do it in a fun, comical way with just a little fun in it.
Good. Well, John, you blogged once, and the next thing you knew, you were getting stuff from San Francisco and Saudi Arabia, I believe, and what else? Talk to us about that.
Well, I wrote a blog, Every year now, I've started doing a blog on my predictions, housing predictions for the next year, and I do it. I'm coming up on the point that I publish that because I do it in September. I don't wait until the end of the year where I make projections for the following year. And the first one I did was a couple of years ago. I just wrote housing predictions and for 2010 and beyond. And when I wrote that, it was picked up by the San Francisco Chronicle. The Huffington Post picked it up. And then overnight, it exploded because of the exposure it was getting, and picked up by a number of blogs all over the country. And as you mentioned, one blog in Saudi Arabia picked it up and published it in Arabic, which was a little hard for me to read.
I can imagine.
But fortunately, they did. I wouldn't have even known it, but they do have an English translation.
Uh-huh.
So I saw it. And that's one of the reasons that I blog, just for exposure, because it does put me in contact with several newspapers around the country. I have some real estate writers that read my blog now, mm-hmm. and occasionally quote me.
Do you get dialogue going with these people, with some of them?
Occasionally, with some of the newspaper people, as well as I will receive questions
mm-hmm.
from homeowners or potential homeowners or home sellers around the country. I have a section on the website where you can ask me a question, and I'll have people email me in and ask these questions about how do I sell my house, or what do I do, or I'm facing foreclosure, and questions especially that relate to the difficult real estate climate and economic climate that we're in today. So I try to give people, you know, my thoughts on where they need to go.
When you put something out like that, you're exposing yourself to the public and criticism. Have you ever gotten some zingers coming back at you?
I've received some of the nastiest emails.
Is that right? Oh, man.
that I could imagine.
Wow.
Because people disagree. Sometimes mm-hmm. I've offered solutions to the housing crisis, for mm-hmm. instance. But obviously, there are lots of different ways that you can approach it, and there are lots of varied opinions. And one of the things that I've noticed is very interesting. There are a lot of folks out there that still want to blame the homeowner. They talk about these irresponsible homeowners that went out and bought more house than they could afford, or they refinanced and went out and bought a Mercedes, or took the round the world tour and so forth, and spent their money irresponsibly. And that happened, but not in a majority of the cases. That wasn't the cause of the housing crisis. Actually, the banks and the government sort of conspired to project that image, because the banks especially didn't want to be blamed for it. But the problem lies with the big major banks around the country and Wall Street and how they package these securities. That's what brought down the housing market. It wasn't the actions of irresponsible homeowners, because if you look at the number of subprime borrowers, it was just over $1 trillion, about $1.5 trillion. Was the amount. So if that's the case, a $1 trillion bailout
should have handled it.
But instead, they've spent trillions of dollars, and it's still not over. So it wasn't the fault of a few irresponsible homeowners, the so-called subprime borrowers. And so, but occasionally, because that image has been fostered, as I said, by the big banks, I'll get emails that. Yeah, that will attack me. I wrote a blog just a week or so ago about that, and I got a big long email from a guy that said that I was my attacks on the banks were similar to a lynching.
Oh man! You know what came to my mind is the original whose fault is it when it was Adam blamed Eve, and that whole kind of thing, and then ultimately it was God, the woman that you gave me, so it's got to be God's fault. It's got to be anyone else's fault but mine. I'm sure you can't come. Yeah, you can. You being Greg Vetter, you can come up with a comparison. What's your challenge? Do you get some pushback when you go into corporations? And what's it like?
The question would be, when don't you?
Okay.
You're going into a corporation and you're telling people how to change everything. And what I do is work with people on productivity and organizational issues. But if you really want to take a look at it, it's all psychological stuff. It's all psych stuff. As I like to say, when I stand in the first day, I'll say this has nothing to do with paper or electronics. This has to do with who you are and the psychology behind how you work.
Oh my, that's pretty... That grabs their attention, doesn't it?
Everyone usually jumps up and flees for the exits. it's about that. How good a decision maker you are. Do you have a good set of boundaries? And people will say, well, I'm different at work than I am at home. No, you're not. You're the same. I mean, if you have a boundary issue at home, if you eat too much, you can't exercise, you go to sleep late, you're going to have those same boundaries at work. You procrastinate, you let other people intimidate you. It just all works the same. Mm-hmm. So without knowing it, I really, when I created the business or a VetterWay system, I was creating psych stuff. But of course, I could never say I was doing psych stuff, because if you ever heard psych stuff, people would flee quicker to the exits than they do already. So it's built into it. But it's, for instance, every time you look at an email, the process of how good of a decision maker you are comes into play. Are you a good decision maker? Are you a poor decision maker? Are you scared to? And all the other different aspects of decision making with a simple email. Do you drag it? Do you do something with it? Do you look at it? Do you leave it? How many emails do you think I've seen in one person's email box?
I'll bet you over thousands.
It was the director of marketing for a restaurant company, which will remain nameless. 20,023.
Oh, my goodness.
And some people really, of course, there's another addiction here, holding on, hoarding, and things like that. Everybody's afraid of, well... What happens if somebody needs
that
this,
piece
or CYA?
Yeah.
And so there's all kinds of stuff that gets in the way instead of being very clear and clean and just producing. And what I do when I go in and work with somebody, the goal is how can you produce twice as much versus what you're doing right now. And that's it. What's in the way of that?
Wow. That's powerful. Can you go ahead.
Well, I've got a couple of questions. One is how you sell this stuff. It occurs to me that it would be a very challenging sale because you're asking people to change. What does your sales process look like?
Mostly referral. Again, 80%, the old 20-80 rule. I've changed it to 3% of enlightenment versus 17% need. Want versus need. I want to change is 3%. 17% is I have to. I need to change. Something's wrong. And so usually I'm working only in those percentages. The people in the middle are kind of like, it'd be like somebody who weighs 400 pounds, and you say to them, do you think you might need to lose a couple pounds? And they say, yeah, maybe 5 or 10.
Right.
It's pure denial. And most of us today, in many aspects, are in very bad denial.
So if Tim works for me, I write the check for you to fix Tim. Is that more? Does it look more like that?
It goes a lot of different ways. It zings in and zings out. It's funny. The one-on-one, when somebody pays for it themselves, is when they're really going to get the most of it. That's when it is. When you're forced to do it, and I try to stay far away from that.
Right.
One thing I am doing a lot more of today is going into organizations and businesses to standardize how they store information. Because with so much information that's out there today that's coming in and accessibility to it, how do you store it? And so what I'll do is I'll go in and I'll give them 12 what I call them support categories, save categories, categories, places, or buckets where they store things. And in Windows Explorer, it'd be under My Documents or under a shared drive. And you'd have 12 names, and everything has to fit into one of those 12 names. And boy, if you don't think that's hard to do, it's like the libertarians, the conservatives, and the liberals arguing on a point. When you put factions of a utility company together in the same room, everybody's arguing for it. But you have to. Otherwise, there's so much information stored so many different ways.
Well, my second question was around ROI. It occurs to me this would lend itself to establishing some sort of indicators, if not hard numbers. Is that a conversation you have early on in your sales process with these guys and say, here's how you're going to know when this thing is working?
I do. Most of it is, again, through the referral. People know. They get it. They get it. They're able to make decisions quickly. They don't have thousands of emails. They're spending 20% of their workday on a QT, a quiet time, where they're working on important things rather than reacting. They're not checking their email. And I haven't pushed real hard on specifics because that's a very hard thing to really note and keep track of. So most of it is on the, from the referral point of view, and the transformation occurs. They know, and I know. I mean, you can see it. It's like they get religion. There's this look in their eye, and they finally get it. I got it, and that's what they say. And then they'll write a tremendously nice testimonial and send it, and I'll ask them to send it to people. And that's really how it comes about, because for me to go out and knock on a door and say, it's like when I used to sell telephones, hi, I want to buy a telephone, it's a little different. You have to be in a conversation with another employee or another person or a friend and saying, boy, this really helped. I now am able to do this, 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 and this. That's kind of the biggest way. Did that answer your question or did I evade it?
Well, absolutely. And I mean, that's got to be incredibly rewarding work to watch that transformation. That's got to feel really good.
It is. It is. And then the challenging part is keeping people into that, because there's this old belief that it takes 21 days to change a habit. I personally don't agree with that at all. If that's true, I would have been running the universe by now. I could have changed a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah. But we won't get into that, will we?
I have to, with the people, stay in touch. And part of the program is staying in touch and doing check-ins. Because if you just do something, generally my experience in being in the change business for a long time is it'll go away. So there has to be something built in. So somebody says, come in and work with me. Okay. And what are you going to do for the rest of your life? And so some type of coaching or something needs to be done in a group where you buddy up mm-hmm. with somebody, and so there's some accountability.
Well, that series of questions, Stone, triggers thoughts for me in terms of the work that you do, John. Have you had real estate people say to you, you're way off on this, or do they feel like you've exposed them mm-hmm. needlessly or anything like that?
Well, occasionally I get some pushback from realtors or others, especially builders. I did have one home builder that was emailing me regularly complaining about the post that I was doing. One, he was saying I was too negative because I blog and I use Twitter also mm-hmm. to post the latest news in housing or the financial markets or the mortgage market. And the latest news in housing for the last 2 or 3 years has not been good. It's difficult to find good news out there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's news. It's what's going on.
It's what's happening.
It's what's happening in the market today. And that's what I'm trying to offer is the latest news on my website. I have a section called Today's Housing News where we post news articles every day on the website about the events that are going on that are pertinent today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm trying to write about that and tweet about that. And as I said, this one builder kept emailing me back, well, you're way too negative. You're hurting the business. But what you have to realize is the business has changed. We have experienced structural changes in the housing, the real estate, the mortgage business,
mm-hmm.
and the economy in general. When you look at the jobs market, we have lost millions of jobs
mm-hmm.
that are never coming back. So we're going to have to deal with that. It's going to be interesting to see what the president offers this week when he comes up to make his talk about the jobs programs and what they can do to stimulate jobs creation, because we've lost all these jobs in manufacturing that have gone, as people talk about, jobs that have gone overseas. Well, that's true. And then some of them just vanished altogether because they've been automated out of existence. And so when you deal with that, if you're thinking in the past the way things used to be, you don't want to hear what's changing.
What's going on.
Yeah. So I do get some pushback, as I said, occasionally. But most people really want to know, because most people realize that the only way to succeed is to be aware of what conditions
what's
are
going
today.
On and how to move beyond that.
Right.
Well, we started way back when with which came first, the book or the job, and the both of you kind of basically said yes, and I like that, and that's what we're after. Well, Greg, how can people contact you if they want to talk with you about employing your services or to get a copy of your book? What would it be?
404-250-1727. You get to talk to me. You get to call me.
You get the real person.
That's the best way. Secondly is www.vetterproductivity. That's not better productivity, but it is. VETTER, vetterproductivity.com.
Great. And John?
The easiest way to get in touch with me is through my website. You can visit the Housing Guru, and there's a contact form in there, or you can just email me, john@thehousingguru.com.
Okay, and that website is also housingguru.com.
Right.
Good. Well, the clock is on us, and I welcome your comments and suggestions about content and our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know, and you can do that by sending us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. I thank you, Stone, for co-hosting, keeping me on track, and throwing in some tough questions there. I can always count on you.
Well, it was fun. I thoroughly enjoyed it. This has been a very interesting show. I learned a ton.
Good. Thanks. And thank you to our guests, John Malky and Greg Vetter. John, your contact information again.
John@thehousingguru.com.
And Greg, your turn one more time.
We'll give you the email, Greg, G-R-E-G, @vetterproductivity.com.
Boy, you've done all three. You're good today. Great. Well, Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. Learn more about Right Choice Services at www.right, that's W-R-I-T-E, choiceservices.com. I hope you will join us next week and tell your friends about the show. In fact, send them an email right now to invite them to listen live or to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. at righthererightnow.businessradiox.com, and the podcast version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.